This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for this hour, they're going to be the views of Jerry Smith, who's a writer. We carry a couple of his books. One is Weather Warfare, and the other is on HARP, the High Altitude Auroral Research Project, the super secret government project up there in Alaska, with similar projects throughout the world that heat up the ionosphere and can change weather. And of course, one of the things we're doing right now is we're in California experiencing terrible, terrible storms and terrible weather. And really, the weather is changing all throughout America, all throughout the world. In some places there are drastic water shortages, in other places there is flooding. And the question is, why are these things happening? Is this an act of God? Or is there a means of changing and altering weather patterns? And why would anybody want to do that? Or maybe there is another agenda out there. And if it is being done, would the people who are doing it admit what was going on? Well, with us is our good friend Jerry Smith, and we've had him on before talking about weather warfare. But, of course, there are a number of things that can be done to alter the weather, and they've known how to do it for many years. They just don't want you to know what they know. And so you go back to 1970 in the book Between Two Ages by Zygmunt Brzezinski, who is one of the really crafters of modern-day policy. He had written a book in 1970, and David Rockefeller read it and hired Zygmunt Brzezinski, and he's worked for the internationalists, the globalists, ever since then. But in 1970, he talked about how in the future they were going to be able to create storms and droughts and all sorts of new terrible diseases to disabled people. And, well, good evening, Jerry. How are you?
Well, hi, Dr. Stan. Good to be with you.
Well, it's good.
I was just looking at a quote from Mr. Z Big out of Between Two Ages, and he wrote, "New weapons have been developed, but not only have new weapons been developed, but some of the basic concepts of geography and strategy have been fundamentally altered. Space and weather control have replaced Suez and Gibraltar as key elements of strategy."
Yeah, but, of course, we can't let the common people out there realize what we're up to, because Zygmunt Brzezinski and David Rockefeller and the globalists are, well, they're our superiors. As David Rockefeller told a friend of mine, some men are born to rule, but most men are born to be ruled. And so we do have a ruling aristocracy in America. They control both political parties and make mockery of the electoral process. And not only that, but they know how to make alter the weather. We're going to be back in just a moment with Jerry as we explore what he has learned. He's done a great deal of research. I think his book is the finest one on weather modification. We have it right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Jerry, you pick up the story and tell us about weather warfare.
All right. Well, I begin the book with a quote from Secretary of Defense William S. Cohen. In 1997, Cohen was speaking at a conference on terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, and U.S. strategy, in his official capacity as the head of the DOD, Department of Defense. So you can understanding. And in 1997, the U.S. government believed, and I quote, others are engaging, even in an eco type of terrorism, whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. It's real, and that's the reason why we have to intensify our efforts. Now, I believe if the department, if the Secretary of Defense says something like that, we should pay attention. And my book is a 400-page analysis of whether or not he was speaking truth. And I concluded that he was right, that those are indeed operational conditions today.
But, of course, it sounds so absurd, Jerry, when you tell people, they look at you, their eyes glaze over, oh, it couldn't be true, because if it was true, why would read about it in the newspaper, or Rush Limbaugh would tell us? But the reality is, we aren't really getting the truth, are we?
Oh, absolutely not. And the reason it's not in the U.S. papers probably goes back to the upshot of what happened during the Vietnam War. During the Vietnam War, the United States got caught with its fingers in the cookie jar, if you will. The United States military was using weather as a weapon during the Vietnam War. Operation Popeye was ongoing for some 8 years. It was an attempt to extend the monsoon season in Southeast Asia by using cloud seeding over the Ho Chi Minh Trail in hopes of turning the Viet Cong resupply route into a hopeless quagmire of mud. The Pentagon admitted that the program had been ongoing for some 8 years. They expended 47,000 units of cloud seeding materials over four countries, two of which in violation of international law, North and South Vietnam and neutral Laos and Cambodia, at a total expenditure of about $21.6 million. When that came out, when the congressional investigation discovered that, that led to an international treaty banning weather as a weapon. That treaty is called the Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques, also known as the ENMOD Convention.
And when was that passed?
That was signed into law in 1978.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jerry Smith, talking about his book on weather warfare, pointing out that during the Vietnam War, under Operation Popeye for some 8 years, the United States military were seeding clouds and modifying the weather, certainly along the Ho Chi Minh Trail, so there would be such a quagmire that it would be difficult to have trucks carrying the weapons that were being brought in at Haiphong, which incidentally we weren't allowed to bomb or try to do anything to stop them coming in. But at least the military, since they wanted to try to win the war, they didn't understand they weren't there to win, but they really thought that what they could do, if they could modify the weather along the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And so for 8 years they did that, and then eventually the information came out, and during congressional investigations, and in 1978 the United States signed a treaty saying that with other countries, saying it was illegal to modify the weather for warfare programs. Of course, treaties are like bread crusts. They're made to be broken, and I suspect that they've used weather modification many times, but we can't let the American people understand they have the ability to modify the weather anywhere at any time they want to. So pick up the story there, Jerry.
Well, you had commented that that Americans don't seem to know about it because the American media doesn't tell them about it. And my point was that prior to our signing the ENMOD Treaty in 1978, the United States federal government was spending between $40 and $140 million a year on developing weather modification technology, and had over 700 degreed scientists working in this. After we signed the treaty, the federal budget went to zero, and those jobs went away. And Uncle Sam wants us to believe that he said, "Oh, can't do that anymore," and just stop doing it. When in fact it was converted to civilian operation. It went to civilian contractors. One of the principal civilian contractors today is Weather Modification Incorporated of Fargo, North Dakota. And oddly enough, in 2005, one of the senior scientists there went on the Art Bell Show and outed himself as having been one of the senior scientists on Operation Popeye that had done the cloud seeding over the Ho Chi Minh Trail. Now, after the U.S. signed the treaty, not only did did the federal budget go away, but oddly enough, all the news stories went away. Prior to that, there were all these magazine and newspaper articles about the future of weather control and how we would soon have hurricanes buttoned up and nailed down and completely docile. And after we signed this treaty, the news stories just stopped. So most people never heard about Weather Modification Incorporated or the dozens of other companies that are doing it across America today.
And I think it's so important for our listeners out there, if you're skeptical, why, once you, if you have a computer, you go up on the computer and you Google in weather modification. And you'll find all sorts of companies that will offer for a price to modify the weather here in America and any place in the world. And the Russians do the same thing. So,
the Chinese even more so. In 2005, Business Week magazine, a nice mainstream, straight-ahead publication, reported that in China, the Chinese federal government was spending $40 million a year and had 35,000 people employed full-time in weather management. You may remember last year, the Chinese government announced that they guaranteed perfect weather for the Olympics. How can they do that? Well, they had 35,000 people working on it round the clock.
And of course, the average person is going to say that couldn't be true. But if you don't think it's true, you go up on the Internet and just Google in weather modification. These companies, what do they charge? Do you have any idea what they charge to modify the weather?
I've never looked at the rate sheets for
all right.
This.
All right, fine. But we have a 4-tape set, and on this one of the interviews with a woman who's Sydney looked into this company called Weather Modification, and Sydney, they have modified the weather, taken all the moisture out of the air over Montana, so that they could build the moisture up in the snowpack, so there'd be more water to ship to Los Angeles. But what happens to the people who are east of Montana, who depend upon that water for? And then we find out that there are tremendous droughts in the east today, and my goodness, some of the nuclear plants are having to shut down because there's no water in the lakes or the rivers to cool down the uranium there, the center where they actually generate the electricity.
Exactly. And you brought up one of the key questions in this. This question goes back the first scientific weather modification in the United States took place in the 1890s, and there have been legal battles running for 130 years now. If I make it rain where I am, and you're downwind of me, and it doesn't rain where you are, did I steal your rain?
Yeah, absolutely, but of course they let them do it.
Right. Right this moment, as you mentioned, Weather Modification Incorporated is working for the ski resorts in Sun Valley, Idaho.
Right.
And they're increasing the snowpack in Idaho and desiccating the air going east from there.
Right. So anyway, the technology is there, but even more interesting is hurricanes. Can they create hurricanes? Can they subside hurricanes? Can they steer hurricanes?
Absolutely. Scientific American, the backbone of America's scientific literature community, had a cover story in April of 2004 in which another civilian scientist working in one of these civilian contractor think tanks released his findings that he now was absolutely dead convinced he knew how to steer a hurricane. At the same time, and actually a decade earlier, you may have heard of the Russian company Elate Technologies. In the 1996-97, there were forest fires burning out of control in Malaysia and Indonesia. And Elate Technologies went to the Malaysians and said, hey, we can create a hurricane on demand and blow out your forest fires. And the Malaysians went for it. They ponied up a never-admitted amount of money. The Russians whipped up their big wind and blew out the forest fires. They also flattened hundreds of villages and left thousands of people homeless. But that's collateral damage.
Well, I think that people in America really know so little of what's going on in the world. And this is one of the great tragedies, because of the degree of control over the media, the average person has no idea of the things that that Jerry is talking about tonight. So do you think that this is being used? Certainly we find these tremendous droughts over in Australia, which of course caused a marked decrease in the amount of wheat which is available in the world. And certainly they were having droughts certainly many times in Africa, where entire crops are being wiped out. And then other areas, certainly there was massive flooding in Zimbabwe and Zambia and Mozambique within the last 2 or 3 weeks, and people were dying. 30 or 40 people died in the floods, the flash floods streamed down the rivers, and many times the children trying to cross the rivers were swept away to their death. Do you think that they are actually using this, or are they just letting nature take its course?
It's almost impossible to know. One of the things I point out is that Mother Nature gives great credible deniability.
Right. And so basically, since it's all top secret and we can't let the common people know what's going on, why, of course, it is a military secret. Nobody in government would dare come forward. If they did, they'd be sent to prison.
Well, it's not just that. There's also, we live in an incredibly litigious age. A classic example of this, and the what shows how the government normally responds to this, is the first attempt to steer a hurricane, Project Cirrus, which was 1949. And Project Cirrus had scientists from General Electric and the U.S. Navy flew out to a hurricane that was safely well out to sea in the Atlantic and cloud seeded it. And shortly after the cloud seeding material was put into the hurricane did a 90-degree turn and came on shore near Savannah, left 1,400 people homeless and killed a couple of people. The Navy's response was to immediately slap secret, put it all under national security and classify all the paperwork. General Electric got their lawyers to round up the scientists and told them to shut up and sit down. And from that point forward, none of the scientists who worked on the project were ever allowed to say anything in public without first going through the lawyers. And the head of the project was absolutely convinced that he had succeeded in steering a hurricane. It went the wrong way, but he was convinced that he'd figured out how to steer a hurricane. Never was it published in the open press. That did end up, a decade later, when the Navy finally declassified the papers, it ended up in the papers where it gave his opinion, but the way the Navy got around that is they trotted out a peer review panel to go over the paperwork as they released it, and the peer review panel said, "Oh no, they just put 180 pounds of dry ice into a hurricane. That's not going to do anything. Don't be silly. This didn't do anything. There's no reason to sue the Navy or General Electric over this."
And so we can't let the public know when they've played their little games.
Exactly, because if they screw up, we might sue them. We might put putting them in jail is one thing. Suing them is something else entirely.
But of course, the other thing is, if the average American knew what some of the people in the government were doing, and I'm talking about the evil people, not the good people, but there are evil people there, why we would lose confidence. We have a government report. We call it the Rockefeller Committee report that came out in 1994 from the Veterans Administration over the name of Senator Jay Rockefeller, that told how the military has experimented on hundreds of thousands of American military without their consent or knowledge. Experiment on them, endangered their lives. Go ahead, Jerry.
Oh, I have an extensive analysis of that report in my book, Heart, the Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy.
Well, we carry that book as well, and we'll want our people to know we do carry the report. You should read it. You should understand what's really going on, because Rush Limbaugh's not going to tell you. Well, go right ahead, Jerry.
All right. Where would you like to take it from here?
Well, you tell me, because you know the subject so much better than I am. Certainly, we signed this treaty back in 1978. Have other countries been developing the weather warfare? You mentioned that both China and Russia seem to have the ability to modify the weather as well.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that. I have been talking about this for a long time now, and one of the things that I find really interesting is the legislation, is the legal angle on this stuff, and very few radio hosts want to go into the legal. I suspect it's because it's, you know, sort of dry, and it's not the sexy stuff that, you know, like Earthquakes on Demand. But I find it absolutely amazing that at several levels that the U.S. and the USSR jointly sponsored a treaty they really didn't want and managed to get a few nations to get on board with it, and then the treaty is largely forgotten. Only 70 nations have signed the treaty, and according to the CIA, there are more than 270 nations. I believe there are 272 nations who are members of the UN, and the CIA says there's another 50 countries that aren't members of the UN. And out of the 300 some on this planet, only 70 have actually joined this thing. This treaty is supposed to have a review every 5 years. It's been around since 1978, and they've only had one review of it. And when they did the review was 5 years late, and only half the treaty signatories actually even bothered to send somebody to the review meeting. Clearly, half the majority of the governments on this planet don't have a clue, and those who do have a clue, most of them are really not interested in this treaty, because that means they can't play with these toys.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I believe it's probably closer to 200 governments in the world, but that's not an important point. Where does HARC fit into this high-altitude auroral research project?
High-frequency.
High-frequency, right.
Right, the high-altitude, that was Gerald Bohl's super gun.
All right.
The HARP is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program.
Right.
It is a field of antennas on the ground in southeastern Alaska, so linked together as to work as one giant antenna. And it is today the world's largest radio broadcasting station, but it's not designed to broadcast for human ears. It's designed to inject 3.6 million watts of radio frequency energy into a spot at the top of the atmosphere. To give you an idea of what that means, the largest legal AM radio station in the U.S. is 50,000 watts. HARP is 72,000 50,000-watt radio stations injecting their entire output into a space about 12 miles across by about 2.5 miles deep by about 90 miles up at the very top of the atmosphere in a region called the ionosphere. Now, this heats the ionosphere by several thousand degrees, so much so that it blows apart the molecules of the atmosphere. And when the molecules are blown apart, they give off a packet of energy, which includes a scream of EOF, extremely low-frequency radio waves, which penetrate deep into the earth and deep into the sea. And the U.S. Navy has been using this to communicate with deeply submerged submarines for about 15 years
now. Hold that thought there, Jerry. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Jerry Smith, and we're talking about HARP. And Jerry has a book on HARP, which we do carry, and that's the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project. Is that right?
That is correct.
All right, fine. And basically, it generates a phenomenal amount of electric power, and it actually centralizes it in an area in the ionosphere, maybe 12 miles or so across, and begins to break apart the molecules. I mean, you're talking about, what are we talking about, really millions of volts, is it, or megahertz, or what?
3.6 million watts of radio frequency energy.
Okay, fine. And, of course, centralized in one small area. And then, of course, they can then bounce that off the ionosphere to into the ground, into the sea. And apparently the Navy uses this to contact submarines anywhere in the world. So go ahead with your story there. What is HARP for? Does this have any weather modification implications or defense implications? Because it's all top secret. Everything has to be speculation. But Jerry studied this.
Well,
remember, we don't want the communists to learn what we're doing. Of course,
HARP is a very odd creature in that it, again, is a case of civilian contractors. It is both secret and not secret at the same time. The military says, well, it's not a military project. There's nothing secret. There's nothing classified about HAARP. But there are ways to keep secrets without having to slap top secret on the top of the page. One thing is you simply don't publish it. Most of the most important documents about HAARP have been simply registered as unpublished, and so only a handful of people can get them because they get Xeroxed and passed around at conferences. And the other thing is that the HAARP website, which supposedly is completely open to the public and is supposed to tell us everything we want to know about HAARP, hasn't been updated in 5 years. So they are telling us absolutely nothing, but they're telling us, and the question of whether it has weather applications is at very much part of the core of the debate of what HAARP is and whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. A major science magazine, and for the moment I cannot remember which science magazine, in 2002 noted that in the year 2000 there was a dogleg in the jet stream immediately over the HAARP site that resulted in a swarm of unseasonal tornadoes in Florida.
And of course the thing is that everything would suggest that they can alter the jet stream with this. Would that be a fair appraisal?
Absolutely. HAARP is apparently based on a suite of patents, and I list the first patent of the 12 in full in my book HAARP, and list all 12 of the patents without their so you can look them up in the back of Weather Warfare. These patents are clearly for a ground-based Star Wars weapon system. When you heat the ionosphere the way HAARP does, blowing the molecules of the atmosphere apart, that converts the atmosphere into a plasma, which is an electrically charged gas, and it goes out into space. And it keeps going out into space until it runs into something to stop it, like a passing spy satellite, an incoming ICBM, or the Earth's magnetic field. The plasma gets trapped between the Earth's magnetic field and spreads out, forming a barrier, a shield of electrically charged particles that will disrupt or destroy anything electrical, like a satellite coming through it.
How about a missile coming through it?
Exactly. Now, the HAARP people say, oh, no, that's not us. We have nothing to do with that. Those patents are not ours. That's for something 40 miles on a side, and we're only 1,000 feet on a side. But the proof that they are it is in who has gotten the contract to build the thing. The patents were originally taken out by APTI, which was originally ARCO Power Technologies Incorporated, but the ARCO in the name gave away too many secrets, so they changed the name to Advanced Power Technologies Incorporated. They got the contract to build HAARP initially because it's built on these patents. It's a unique, one-of-a-kind thing. The APTI was bought by E-Systems, a major defense contractor. E-Systems then got the contract. E-Systems was then bought by Raytheon, one of the world's largest contractors. Raytheon then got the contract. Raytheon then spun off E-Systems to BAE Systems, the former British Aerospace, and they got the contract.
I see. Well, of course, a lot of these are military. Certainly Raytheon's a military contractor.
Absolutely. BAE Systems is one of the world's largest military contractors.
So that sort of gives us an idea that maybe they're not being forthcoming with this. I mean, it is totally illogical that our government, with all, the money that it has not built an anti-ballistic missile system. We have 6 missiles stationed in Alaska, which are supposed to guard us against some 3,000 or 4,000 Russian missiles. Are we really supposed to believe our leaders are that gullible and foolish? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and my remarks suggest that we're not being told about the Defense for America. Certainly, we are working, and we probably already have operational, a laser defense against incoming anti-ballistic missiles. What part HAARP will play in this, we really don't know. And, of course, they claim that there's nothing secret there, but They're certainly not telling us. They don't want us to know what's going on. But believe me, the Russians know. In fact, today, America, despite the fact we are having to borrow $2.5 billion a day just to meet our everyday expenses, a lot of that money being borrowed from other countries, why we are still funneling money into Russia under one or another pretense. Why would we be doing that when they've got over $440 billion in reserves? Well, lots of unanswered questions. So, Jerry, as far as this is concerned, what do you think that HAARP is being used for at the present time, or do we have any idea other than experimentally just to see how it works?
Well, there is what it's officially being used for, what it's unofficially being used for, and what the people who, like myself, who have been trying to connect the dots, think it's being used for. Officially, it's being used for very little. HAARP was in the news of sorts last weekend. HAARP did a test in which they bounced their radio signal off the moon and asked ham radio operators around the world if they could hear it. This should have alerted some people that something was up, in that you may remember the old CIA spy ships, the USS Pueblo and the Liberty. The Pueblo was captured by the North Koreans, and the Liberty was almost sank by the Israelis. They both used the technique, a brand new then in the 70s technique, bouncing radio waves off the moon so they could signal back directly to Langley, CIA headquarters. But it was a one-way thing. They didn't have a receiver. They only had sending equipment. HAARP may be working out some of the bugs out of that system for a next generation of moon-bound secret spy stuff. But we really don't know. We do know that it has been used to communicate with deeply submerged submarines. The Navy admits that. The HAARP website admits that.
Well, some people have said that it can be used to pick up minerals in the ground. Is there any truth to that?
Well, yes, no. HAARP was originally funded to do something very much like that. It was originally funded to do something called earth-penetrating tomography, which is a brand-new science that it did not exist before the 1980s.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there, Jerry, because we're going to bring our stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jerry Smith. His book is Weather Warfare and HAARP. Is that the ultimate weapon?
Right. The first book is HAARP, the ultimate weapon of the conspiracy. And the new book that just came out is Weather Warfare, the Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, before we go on, Jerry, I want you to get your website out because I know you have some other books, and although we do carry the book on HAARP and weather warfare, I want to give you an opportunity to get out your information as well.
Right. My other book is Secrets of the Holy Lance, the Spear of Destiny in History and Legend. My website, I'm Jerry E. Smith, Jerry with a J. And my website is jerryesmith.com, jerryesmith.com.
jerryesmith.com, okay.
And you'll find a great deal of information on the site. I have a section for each book that includes a basic overview of what the book is, the table of contents, reviews of the book, articles about the book, breaking news stories about that subject. And there's also an archive of articles I've written, a book of my poetry, biographical material, and some other cool things.
All right. Now, Jerry was saying that we know that HAARP is being used to bounce signals off the moon to communicate with various parts of the world. We also suspect that it has been used for other purposes. But, of course, the government will not tell the American people, even though, of course, we're being charged and we're paying for this, but you common people really are incapable of understanding what the elite are doing. Why are they developing these bizarre types of weapons? And, of course, we said earlier, HAARP certainly would appear to have the capacity to alter the jet stream, and in the past it's been pointed out that the jet stream going over this region has been altered. And, of course, this then has a profound impact upon weather across America. What other purposes do you think HAARP is being used for?
Well, again, the curious thing, one of the very, very curious things, is that HAARP was originally funded to do something called earth-penetrating tomography, which is a brand-new science. Another HARP is a type of device called ionospheric heater. There are about 20 ionospheric heaters scattered around the planet, but only HARP uses a unique patented ability to sequencing the firing of the antennas within the antenna field to focus the energy coming out of it. All the rest of them are just a whole bunch of antennas, and the energy goes away and dissipates. But it does manage to heat. They do manage to heat the ionosphere somewhat. And another ionospheric heater in Alaska called High Pass, operated by the UCLA, succeeded in heating the ionosphere enough to break down the molecules to create the scream of ELF, extremely low frequency radio waves, and use that, because it goes deep into the earth, they used it to find and map out an old tunnel system outside of Fairbanks, Alaska. With that, they went to the U.S. Congress and got the Senate military appropriations committee to fund HARP to do that on a grand scale. And HARP was originally funded to bathe the world in ELF so that they could locate and monitor enemy underground bases for the manufacture and launch of weapons of mass destruction. Now, the wacky thing is now almost 20 years later, there's not a single word anywhere in HARP literature that they have ever done this. This leads me to ask the question, is HARP thumbing its nose at the U.S. Congress, or have they done it and done it so well they don't want anybody else in the world to know how good they are at it, and are just deliberately staying mum on the subject?
Well, we know that the communists in Russia have, you know, extensive underground cities, even and that's command headquarters, and they're really prepared, of course, when the nuclear war comes, to be able to protect large segments of their population. And we've heard, we understand that there other countries really are pretty good at building tunnels. And I suspect we are as well, but of course we never want to let the American people know that. The only thing, of course, we do know is that they are preparing for nuclear war. They're preparing underground places for the elite to go to be protected in case of a chemical, biological, or neurological warfare, but they've totally discouraged any defense for the average American.
Now, on the weather angle of this,
all right,
what I suspect is going on with HARP is that HARP is being used to tweak the jet stream so as to, during hurricane season, build in a high-pressure dome over the southeastern United States. Now, my evidence for this is that HARP was completed in 2006. You remember the 2005 hurricane season was the worst ever. That's Rita and Katrina and Wanda. You know, that was the largest number of named hurricanes ever, the largest number of Category 4 and 5 hurricanes ever making landfall in the U.S. in a single season. The following year, HARP is raced into completion. HARP was scheduled to be completed in 2007, and they finished it right around Thanksgiving Day 2005. By 2006 hurricane season, HARP is at full broadcast capacity and is running a lot of tests that nobody's saying what they're doing. Now, what happens over the southeast? The southeast gets this anomalous, persistent, high-pressure dome, and the 2006 hurricane season, not a single hurricane made landfall in the United States. Now, we also had tremendous drought because of the heat associated with this high-pressure dome. The weather talking heads all say, well, it was El Nino. That's what it was. It was El Nino. Well, the next year, there is no El Nino, and yet that high-pressure dome is back, and again, no hurricanes make landfall. We do get the high-pressure dome is smaller, and we do get torrential rains in Texas. I believe that they're tweaking this thing, trying to get it to the point where it stops the hurricanes, but it doesn't fry out the southeast like it did the first year that they ran it. Now, if you are a beachfront property owner in the Carolinas or Florida, you may think, well, stopping hurricanes, that's a good thing. But if you own a farm in the southeast or had your property burned down in the wildfires, you don't think it's such a good thing.
Yeah.
And a close personal friend of mine died because she was a shut-in without air conditioning. So I believe that Harp murdered Ariel Louise, and there's no way I'm going to be able to bring civil action for that.
Well, I think between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference, and we have people who want to play God. They want to be able to control the weather, and they've put a lot of our money into it, and of course, they can actually create hurricanes, can't they, Jerry?
Well, the Russians say they can. The Russians, again, there's elite technologies, and elite technologies insist that they can blow up a big wind whenever you want one. And I think they did it in Malaysia in 78, and I believe they did it again with Gulf War II. You remember Gulf War I, it lasted, 56 hours? When we launched Gulf War II, the Allies assumed we'd be in Baghdad by Wednesday. And what happened? The moment the war launched, suddenly the worst sandstorm in history came up. The strongest winds in 100 years came up and blew sand in the faces of the Allied armies for 3 weeks. I think Saddam Hussein went to his old friend the Russians and said, "Can you buy me some running time?"
Okay. We will never know, though. That's the trouble, because our government would know, of course, whatever was going on there. But since we work very closely with the Russians, of course, we would never want to let the American people know that.
And Saddam Hussein has no problem with doing environmental badness. He has no problem with using the environment to help himself. Leastwise he did before he assumed room temperature. As Rush Limbaugh would put it, during Gulf War I, you may remember the cause of Gulf War I was Saddam Hussein insisted that the Kuwaitis were slant drilling into an Iraqi oil field and stealing Iraqi oil. And he could not get the world community to make the Kuwaitis stop doing it, so he asked us, "Do you mind if I take care of them?" And our ambassador, April Gillespie, said, "No, we consider that an internal affair." So he went over and smacked the Kuwaitis. It turned out not to be an internal affair, and we were prevailed upon to prevail upon him and push him back out. And as he left, he, as a good mafioso type businessman might do, he burned all the oil wells that were stealing his oil. The trouble is that 700 oil wells produced this immense cloud of smoke, and this immense cloud of smoke became a serious, one of the world's greatest environmental problems. Meteorologists around the world said, "Oh my goodness, there's going to be hell to pay for this. It will bring on an early monsoon season." And it did. The monsoon season came on several weeks early with one of the strongest monsoons ever seen. Bangladesh is a country where the average altitude of the country is 20 feet. And the monsoon came in with a 40-foot storm surge. There were 2.5 million people in trees, and over 100,000 people died because of Saddam Hussein burning those oil fields.
That's fascinating. I never heard that before, Jerry, but certainly it's quite logical because, of course, the particulate matter in the atmosphere can bring about terrible storms and terrible results.
And indeed, that's how cloud seeding, that's how artificial rainmaking got its start in 1880. During the U.S. Civil War, it was noted that great battles were often followed by great rainstorms. And a Civil War general in charge of an artillery battery thought maybe it was the concussion from the explosions of his artillery that was causing it, and patented it. And the very first patent granted for artificial rainmaking was granted in 1880 to a U.S. general. The United States Army has been involved in this literally from day one.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We have time for couple of calls if you have a question for Jerry. I don't know anybody who is certainly more well-versed in this field. He's done a tremendous amount of research. His book is excellent, and that's, of course, why we carry it. And in the four-tape set that we're offering on weather modification, why we have one of my interviews there with Jerry, because we think we need to get out his information. Now, what do you think, if there's any relationship to this terrible cold weather we're experiencing here in California and in Los Angeles? And is there simply anything you would say would be totally conjecture, because it's all top secret? Nobody is allowed to tell the common people, but what are your thoughts?
You know, again, Mother Nature gives great credible deniability.
Right.
You can use a weather weapon, and as long as nobody actually sees you using it, yeah, everybody just assumes that it's cranky Mother Nature.
All right, fine. Well, we've got Mark calling from Ohio, so let's go to Mark here in just a moment. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Hi.
Hi, do you have a question or comment for us? Incidentally, how are you hearing us, shortwave or internet?
I'm using shortwave. I'm listening to you on 49 meter.
All right, fine. Is it coming through pretty well?
Real good over here in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio.
Okay, fine. Well, tell us, did you have a question or comment for our guests?
I used to do a lot with pirate radio, and there's a radio frequency band that's below ham 10 meter and above the CB band. And we used to listen to that, and they used to call them woodpeckers. And
you're talking about the electromagnetic low frequency ELF frequency. Is that what you're speaking of?
Yes. Well, the rumor was is that these things were being emanated from the Soviet Union, and even back, as far back as 10, 15 years ago, they were thinking that they were manipulating the weather with these. I was just wondering if he had heard of these. I know that these were popular around 27 megahertz, 27.500, 27.580.
Okay, and, fine. Let's ask Jerry about it. Jerry, do you know anything about this? I remember that was being talked about maybe 20 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, in my first book, HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, I have a whole chapter on the subject. The chapter is Chapter 3, Electromagnetic Warfare, The Moscow Signal, The Russian Woodpecker, Gwen, and HARP. The Russian woodpecker was very real, and it was called a woodpecker because it was a series of quick taps, tap, 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 then silence, then tap, 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 then silence. It really annoyed ham radio operators for a couple of decades. It went offline. It stopped happening shortly after the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. Apparently, the main part of the system was powered by Chernobyl, and when Chernobyl went down, the system went down.
Okay.
Is that similar to over the horizon radar? Because they were using very, very similar on the same frequencies often.
Hold it.
Right. Now, according to the U.S. government, it was an over the horizon radar system. The Russians would never admit to what it was. The U.S. government told the world, well, that's an over the horizon radar system, and it doesn't work very well. We're not worried about it. And when it stopped broadcasting, the U.S. position was, see, it didn't work very well, so they stopped with it. There are a lot of other theories as to what it was, because it seemed to have a psychotropic side to it. It seemed to come in at a mind level. And one of the big concerns about HARP is that HARP is designed to bathe the Earth in ELF at exactly the same frequency that the human brain works at. So that that's what got my interest in the HARP project was I had been studying mind control since 1976 when I met Walter Bowart when he was on his tour for his book Operation Mind Control, which blew the whistle on the CIA's MK Ultra program, which is a very well proven documented piece of badness from the CIA. Walter Bowart, oddly, incidentally, died just a few days ago.
I know, I noticed that. We're out of time there. Mark, thank you so very much
for
calling.
Thanks. God bless you guys.
Hey, thank you. And
we'll
be back in just a moment here with Mike. Anyway, our guest this evening has been Jerry Smith. His book is Weather Warfare, and you also carry his book on HAARP, The Ultimate Weapon. So hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Mike, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Do you have a question or comment for
me? Yeah, a question for Jerry. I think you were saying a few minutes ago that HAARP could be used to destroy incoming missiles.
Right. That is, as best anybody can tell, that is what it was originally designed to do. That is, the original APTI patents that were developed by Dr. Bernard Eastland and his team is about a system for creating a plasma, which is an electrically charged gas that goes out into space that stops incoming ICBMs. And there is some speculation that HAARP may have proven that it can do it simply because it may have brought down the space shuttle Columbia.
Well, that was my question.
Right. The Columbia disaster may have been a case of friendly fire. We know that the HAARP antenna array was in use that night. It was up and running at full power, which at that point in time was 960 kilohertz effective radiated power, and it was in full power mode for approximately 90 minutes before the shuttle attempted reentry and continued broadcasting for about another 90 minutes after loss of signal from the orbiter. Now, one of the things we know that, this is hard data to get, but the U.S. government, particularly DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, admits to four things they've done with HAARP, and one of the things that they admitted to was reduction of populations of charged particles in the electron belts or in the radiation belts. That basically what it is that the Earth is surrounded by the magnetic field and the solar wind. Charged radioactive particles coming at us from the sun get caught between the magnetic lines of force and create the Van Allen belts. Now, what HAARP has been doing is relieving the particle levels in the Van Allen belts by we send up into the Van Allen belts this plasma which overburdens it and forces it to precipitate out. That is, rain hard radiation back to Earth, which I'm not entirely certain is a good idea. And I know there has been no environmental impact study done on this. And this is being done so that radio signals and hardware can move through the Van Allen belts without damage.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there, Jerry. We'll have to get you back sometime real soon. Thank you so much. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Mike had called in. Mike, we're all done, but I hope that helped
yep.
some of your questions.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. And Mike had simply asked if the HAARP had anything to do at all with the bringing down of one of our returning missiles, one of our returning transport being used to transport Americans back from the space shuttle. I think it was called the Challenger. And Jerry said there are many, many people who think that HAARP brought it down. And, of course, you have to understand that when our government is quite willing to experiment on hundreds of thousands of our servicemen without their knowledge, if you've ever read the report that came out from the Defense Department during the 1960s, Operation Northwood, where they were actually talking about how we were going to get into a war with Fidel Castro. One of the things, they were going to shoot down the satellite that John Glenn was going up in, and then we'd blame that on Castro. We could use that to justify our war. You have to understand that we're dealing with people who look at the world differently than you and I, who do not value the human life, and certainly in the military, you're quite willing to expend 1,000, 10,000 lives, you know, just so long as it serves political purposes. We know that the invasion of Iwo Jima and Okinawa were unnecessary. We have actually the article out of the Chicago Tribune in August of 1945 pointing out the Japanese have been trying to surrender for 6 months, and we wouldn't let them surrender. And the only thing they asked is that the emperor not be tried as a war criminal, and we didn't try him. But we could have avoided dropping the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We could have avoided the invasion of Iwo Jima and Okinawa and saved American and Japanese lives, but our leaders didn't want to. They were unconcerned about that. And you have to understand, we're dealing with people who look at the world differently than you and I. Well, if you'd like to get the Rockefeller Committee report that has that quotation about how they've experimented on hundreds of thousands of our servicemen, if you'd like, of course, to get other material, we've talked about the things we have, the book on weather warfare on HAARP, our four-tape set on weather warfare, our four-tape set on HAARP. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You can certainly call there and get the suggested price or gift for these products. And we think they're very, very important. You need to understand what this is about if you want to get those pages from Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages, where he talks about how we'll be able to form storms and droughts. This is written in 1970. Understand this is not imaginary, it's real. And you need to have this information. But, of course, why would anybody want to use this and do harm to our people? Well, very simply, because they look at the world differently than you and I. They are totally contempt for the average individual. They do not believe in sovereignty. They believe in a ruling elite. They believe, certainly, that we need to have a world government and a new world religion, destroy Christianity, a new world leader. And they are all energized by spiritual forces. And this is the fact that most people do not understand. There really is a spiritual dimension. There are people who are under the control of that spiritual dimension, knowingly or unknowingly. If you have not yet heard my talk on the forbidden secret, you need to get it. You need to get our four-tape sets on the secret behind the secret. And then, of course, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Give us, if you remember our telephone number, it's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Certainly, you can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can pull down our newsletters, many of them written on the occult, or you can get our little three pamphlet set, of each one with five newsletters dealing with the occult hierarchy. And that's the title, The Occult Hierarchy. And if you'd like the pamphlet put out by the Lucis Trust on the work of the spiritual hierarchy, you could request that. We'll send it to you. Understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being played on a political and ideological battlefield. Our number again, 1-800-544-8927. And please pray for America and pray for revival, because if we don't have a revival, we're going to lose America. And lastly, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, and of course for this next hour, they're going to be the views of Byron Richards, and this is a very important issue we're going to be talking about. Now, before we go on, I certainly want to mention there is going to be a meeting this Saturday. It's going to be at the Doubletree Hotel, just outside of Santa Rosa. And it's going to be a meeting put on by the California chapter of Eagle Forum. And looks like there's going to be a good crowd. I'm going to be speaking not once, but twice. I'm flattered to be asked to speak and to be the master of ceremonies for the evening. Jerome Corsi, Dr. Corsi, is going to be there. Phyllis Schlafly will be there. Michael is going to be there. Michael Shaw, who's a frequent guest here on Radio Liberty, and other excellent guests and speakers. If you're interested in going, it's all day long. It starts at 9 o'clock in the morning and goes till 8 or 9 o'clock at night. There's lunch and dinner will be served. But if you'd like more information, call 707-539-8393. That's 707-539-8393. And if you want more information, you can always call our 800 number, 800-544-8927. Now, right now, let's get to Byron Richards. And he had written an article recently that was just, well, I really couldn't hardly believe it. And so we've checked it out. It's absolutely true. And I'm going to let Byron tell you the mischief that they're up to back in Washington, D.C. Byron, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, Dr. Stan. How are you this evening?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
You're right here. This what we're talking about is called the Mothers Act, and it's Bill S-1375. And it's a really diabolical piece of legislation that Big Pharma is trying to usher through Congress under the radar. And by that I mean they have made this bill look like it is the friendliest thing for pregnant and expecting mothers, and all they want to do is just be so nice to them and help them out when their mood gets in a little bit of trouble. The problem, as we know, Dr. Stan, is that when Big Pharma tries to help somebody out, it means give them drugs, and it means that frequently, and then certainly in this case, the side effects of these drugs is extremely dangerous to the unborn child. Essentially what they want to do is brand 80% of pregnant women in need of psych drugs, antidepressants, the very ones, Dr. Stan, that we've been hearing don't even work.
Amen to that. In fact, what they do many times lead to homicidal and suicidal tendencies on the part of the people who take them. So why would we want to give drugs to people that really are very ineffective, but that do, in certain instances, create homicidal and suicidal tendencies? Remember the woman who had killed her 5 children, drowned them all in the bathtub, and she was on these same types of drugs, and now they want to give them to all pregnant women. Well, how certainly are they going to determine who gets the psychiatric drugs, and how are they going to get the women to take them?
Well, the legislation mandates that healthcare professionals of all types, whether in traditional health, midwives, alternative practitioners, individuals dealing with the pregnant woman will have to explain to her that her mood issues should be treated, and antidepressants would be the treatment of choice.
And, of course, in other words, the government is going to force healthcare workers, whether they believe in it or not, to tell women, pregnant women, that they should be getting on these psychiatric drugs prophylactically. Because, of course, they might have emotional problems if they don't take them. They might even get a postpartum depression, and you know what that means. We're going to be back in just a moment with Byron. This is incredible legislation. Well, Byron, you picked the story up there.
All right. Well, the issue here, Dr. Stan, is that Well, there's several issues, but one of the key issues is that when children or the little babies or the fetuses are exposed to these antidepressants, we know that they cross the placenta, and we enter biologically active levels of these drugs into the evolving nervous system of the fetus. Now, this is quite a serious matter, Dr. Stan, because it's not the same as an adult where the nerves are more established and a bit more mature and a bit more stable. We're talking about the evolving nervous system, and those evolving nerves are making their connections to the heart and to the lungs and to the rest of the body. And we have found that there's a 2% risk for cardiovascular birth defects, an overall 4% risk for birth defects when a mother uses antidepressants, because they actually significantly interfere with the evolving nervous system. And if it's not a blatant birth defect, then we know that there are other signs of a failure to thrive, a failure to adapt. There's a higher rate of seizures, respiratory problems, and literally well over 30% of the babies born to a mother who's used antidepressants have serious malnutrition-like syndromes where they're born prematurely. They don't thrive, they don't adapt, they don't do what they're supposed to do, and these are more than just a little symptom. This is problems with how the nervous system has wired the body up to that point. And this legislation, this Mother's Act, would actually encourage women to be on this kind of a medication that has this kind of a known side effect. So the net result of what the senators are currently trying to do is essentially pass legislation that will injure babies.
And, of course, the thing is that, you know, most mothers, if they really knew the potential dangers, a lot of mothers would give up smoking or drinking or anything, of course, during the pregnancy because they wouldn't want to harm their child. But, of course, is there going to be anything there, more informed consent, where the mother should be told that this will increase their the danger of damaging their child 30%? I bet that's not concluded in the legislation. I bet there's no informed consent at all.
No, and a lot of this data and a lot of the studies that have been published on the side effects of the medications have been published within the last 6 months, Dr. Stan, which is actually the legislation was crafted before a lot of the studies came out. Any senator with any level of responsibility would say, whoa, wait a minute here. Not only do we have these problems that are now emerging for pregnant mothers and their unborn children, but we also have a whole hold that thought, we'll be back. 10 years from the public of these antidepressants in all use.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Byron was simply saying that there have been studies now that show that if mothers are on antidepressant drugs during the pregnancy, why at least 30% of their children will have a difficulty as far as failure to thrive and other things, other conditions. Are there any congenital abnormalities? I thought there were some congenital heart abnormalities, Byron.
Well, that's right. In particular, the heart-related side effects are really a problem. And up to 2% of mothers who take these can have this heart defect that can be, you know, they can ruin the health of the child for the entire lifetime.
And of course, what happens as far as the child's mind is concerned? You said that about 30% of them, when the mother is taking these psychiatric drugs, 30% of the children don't thrive. But what does this do as far as their personality, as far as their mentality? Is there increased the incidence of autism or any other neurodegenerative disease?
Well, we know that they have malfunctioning stress tolerance. And when we when the scientists have tested these drugs in mice, who obviously have a shorter lifespan, they have significant stress intolerance and depression as adult mice, specifically from the exposure of these drugs in the gestational period. As far as humans go, we don't have enough track record of these drugs. I mean, they started these newfangled Prozacs and Zolofts and so on became popular in the 1990s. So we don't have a whole generation yet of pregnant mothers and data. When they look at the children who are born to mothers who have done this, and they're tracking some of them, they do have abnormal stress tolerance. They do have inability to cope. It's somewhat difficult to pick trends out of them because it's an unfortunate story, but the parents themselves have been stressed and stressful around the children and providing an unstable environment, which was also going on during the pregnancy, which is usually part of the reason for the antidepressants in the first place. So it's a little bit hard to pick out the emerging patterns conclusively, at least at ages 2 and 4, although it is clear that there's something not right.
Well, of course, the thing is, you would think that before they would make a recommendation that would insist, would mandate that, of course, health care providers encourage women, and up to, is this up to 80% of women?
Well, they're trying to redefine postpartum depression and spread it out as a pre-pregnancy condition. And so we know, of course, that when a woman gets pregnant, her thyroid is going to be working overtime, and if she had any problems with that prior pregnancy, or sometimes if she's had a family history, the first time there'll be a problem is when she's pregnant because it has extra work to do. And if she has a poor history with stress tolerance or moods anyway, then the adrenal glands are often stressed. And so we see a lot of women who are not eating right, they're not taking good care of themselves, they have a history with stress, they have a history with thyroid, at least a family history. They get pregnant, and now they're along for the ride for the next 9 months. And so we see there's a lot of things that could be done naturally, of course, to help this out. But, you know, what we have is a society that thinks big pharma can just come in. And for some adults, you know, the antidepressants are a quick fix. They boost up levels of neurotransmitters. If they're going to work at all, that's what they do. It's kind of like a credit card on your nervous system. But it's a whole different ballgame when you're pregnant and when you've got a little baby in there that you have to be concerned about, because the side effects are not only dangerous to the mother, but very, very dangerous to the unborn child.
Well, now, of course, have you looked into the relationship between the Prozac, Luvox, and these other serotonin uptake inhibitors? Have you looked into that relationship between that and, of course, homicidal and suicidal thoughts? Is this
well,
a real
fact? Well, Dr. Sam, every single school shooting, the kid that's doing it has been on these psych drugs. And so, you know, that doesn't prove that they're the cause, but there's certainly a lot of guilt by association there because they're either on them or withdrawing or recovering from them. And this has been going on for a number of years. And the bottom line of it is that the physicians who prescribe these things, they don't really even understand what they're doing because the drug companies haven't told them. But when you take Prozac or Zoloft, instead of feeling better, a lot of times you actually feel more anxious, more weird, and the doctors will just say, well, double or triple the dose. Well, of course, this can raise quite a bit of psychiatric-related stress because the person really just wants to get out of their body, literally. I mean, it's a horrible place to be when these psych drugs start to really ramp it up. And it's common that the doctor, when a patient reports they're experiencing this, they tell them to take more. And this, of course, is what's really harming people. In fact, one of the mothers who's been leading the charge here, Amy File, that's exactly what happened to her, Dr. Stan, and she's been the one who has been trying to get the word out, and now she's getting a lot of help here. She has a website at uniteforlife.org where she has a lot of information about the Mothers Act and a petition there that people can go to, Dr. Stan, but she's an example of a mom who's really had a hard time, was treated recklessly by the medical profession, and nearly committed suicide, thought about killing her child, just nasty things. And so she wants to warn other mothers just how bad this can be, and she's doing a pretty good job here of helping to get the word out on this topic across the country, as are we.
One of her says the federal drug and FDA, Federal Drug Administration, authorized this use of the SSRI drugs in pregnant women. I mean, many of these times, you know, they will have certainly the statements on the package insert that says, we do not know what it'll do. What do they say? Have you had a chance
to? You know, I don't actually know the answer to that one in particular. Certainly doctors have the right to prescribe these things in an off-label manner. And they do. They frequently prescribe the SSRI medications during pregnancy. And many times FDA hasn't approved this as a specific use. It's just one of these unspoken things that doctors do where they give drugs to treat the symptoms. And the real risk-related data or the safety of that has not been proven by the FDA.
Well, of course, it really, you would think that certainly the drug companies are pushing this legislation. They're not interested in the mothers. They're interested in selling more of their products. I mean,
well,
they're making
right.
billions
and
of dollars.
We look at the culpability here of the FDA. I mean, the FDA has a responsibility to ensure for the public that the drugs they are using for a given condition are tested in post-market follow-up safety by the drug companies. The drug companies never want to do this testing because it almost always shows the drugs don't work, and then they can't give them anymore. And the FDA acts more like a friend of the drug companies and just lets them get along with this. And so we really don't have the kind of data that should be there for doctors to prescribe these things with any confidence. And all the data we do have, Dr. Stan, is actually quite frightening and would indicate that this shouldn't be given out at all. Here's another thing, though, Dr. Stan. The Senate, the House has already passed this bill, the Mothers Act. The Senate is trying to sneak it through in the beginning of April. And the only thing that's going to stop this is consumers writing into their senators and telling them that this is just for the birds. Now, I'd like to point out, I've made this very easy for anybody to do. Go to my website at www.wellnessresources.com. That's wellnessresources.com. Right on my homepage, you can see a Take Action link that goes to the CapWiz software. With two clicks of a mouse, you can send a letter to both of your senators opposing S-1375, the Mothers Act. If they hear, we've got close to 5,000 people right now who have sent letters to their senators, Dr. Stan, but we need a lot more. We really need to get up to about 20,000 here before their Easter recess is over, because now that the senators know that there's a broad objection to this going on, they're trying to sneak it through under the radar very fast. They're planning to put it up into the Senate without any chance for amendment, without any debate on the floor. They're just going to ramrod it through the Senate when they come back from the Easter break. That's their current strategy right now. The senators don't want to be called baby injurers. They don't want to be called on the carpet for what they're actually doing, which is passing big pharma-friendly legislation that's going to injure mothers and children. And the taxpayers are going to have to pay for grants to give out all this medication for free. So it's a socialized medicine push at the same time, Dr. Stan.
Well, could you cover that? Because I think that this is one of the most incredible things, is that the women are going to get their Prozac free, but you can be sure they're not going to get good prices. The government's not going to get good prices. In fact, very often government agencies will buy the most expensive drugs. Other agencies will buy cheaper drugs, but government agencies will buy the most expensive drugs. Why? Because they're in bed with the drug companies. What most people don't understand is the Federal Drug Administration gets money, is paid by the drug companies. And there's some sort of relationship there where literally millions of dollars are funneled back to the FDA by the drug companies because, of course, they just don't have enough money to check on all these drugs. And so the drug companies provide it. But certainly the old adage of he who pays the piper calls the tune. And since the drug companies are funding the Federal Drug Administration, the Federal Drug Administration compromises its principles. But here we're going to see not only the damage to the mothers, we're going to see the damage to the children, the unborn children.
Well, and you know what else, Dr. Stan? This legislation, the Mothers Act, actually calls for taxpayers to foot the bill for the biological development of new biotech drugs for pregnant mothers. So the FDA actually really likes this legislation because it's going to enable them to further their agenda, which is to create all these new biotech drugs. That's why Von Eschenbach is the head of the FDA right now. He's in there for one reason and one reason only, and that's to get more of people on really dangerous biotech drugs, and he's trying to create this biotech industry. And that's where all his friends and connections are. So, you know, really the FDA, in all practical purposes, has become a drug company. It's like having the fox in charge of the hen coop, you know.
And, of course, you know, we know what happens. It's usually the fox ends up eating all the hens and all the hens' eggs. People find it very difficult to believe.
Yeah, well, the hens are the little babies, so let's keep this in mind.
Well, I think that
we got a problem here. I mean, we're going after people that haven't even been born yet with drugs. What rights do they have?
And they have absolutely no rights. And, of course, when we get back, we're going to be talking a little bit about, do these drugs really work? And do they decrease depression We'll be back in just a moment here with Byron Richards. Well, Byron, I would ask you the question, what are the studies that show that these psychotropic drugs are better than placebos? My understanding is that if you evaluate and compare them with placebos, there's maybe only 1 or 2% or maybe 3% at the most of effectiveness of the use of these drugs. Tell us what you found in your studies.
Well, it was just broken as a news story here in the last couple of months by the New York Times and others. A whistleblower within the FDA, who no longer works at the FDA, was well aware that when the SSRI medications became popular in the early 1990s, that the drug companies, number one, hid the suicide data from the FDA. That's been known now due to several lawsuits that have been filed against them. But even so, the data that was originally given to the FDA support the use of the drugs, which the FDA then approved, half that data never got published in the scientific literature. And the half that didn't get published, it should be no surprise to anybody, were all the negative studies that showed that these drugs didn't really do anything. So when you combine the studies that did get published with the studies that didn't get published, the net result is that only in very, very severe depression could these drugs do anything even in the remotely positive aspect compared to placebo, meaning for mild depression, moderate depression, anxiety issues, baby blues, all the things they want to use these things for and give them to the pregnant women, they don't do anything. So they don't even have any real proof of working at all. And, of course, the drug companies have been able to keep the lids on this now for almost 15 years. Well, now that their patents are about to expire and they've made their billions scamming people, they don't really care anymore. But they want to go after new target markets like pregnant mothers, our children, with the antipsychotic medications. They've had success doing that over the last 4 or 5 years. That's why Eli Lilly with Zyprexa, they make $4 billion a year. 25% of the company's profit is raping Medicare and Medicaid, poisoning kids in orphanages, poisoning adults in retirement living or nursing homes with these drugs and having Medicare and Medicaid pay for them. So they see there's this wonderful market opportunity to get these psych drugs being paid for in public situations. That's how they can make money. That's what they're now trying to do with their antidepressants, and they're trying to commit taxpayers to pay Big Pharma to develop new drugs, which cost billions of dollars to develop, quite frankly. And then once the taxpayers pay to develop the drugs, then they're going to pay Big Pharma to give the drugs. We pay to give them.
And I think people have to really understand. There's a wonderful book we carry. It's called What You Should Know About the Drug Companies. It's written by Dr. Marcia Angel, who's on the staff at Harvard, who is formerly the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, certainly the single most prestigious journal in medicine today. And Marcia Angel pointed out that most of the research on drugs is done by the FDA. It's paid for with your tax money. And once the FDA has developed drugs, then they turn them over to the drug companies to run some studies to see if they're effective. And, of course, the drug companies are allowed to market them. And they make billions of dollars a year. You look at the profits. Certainly many of our major corporations are not making money. Our automotive industry is losing money. But Big Pharma is making the largest profits of any concern and any producer in the United States today. We'll be back here in just a moment with Byron. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Byron was simply saying that there have been a number of studies. There was one actually released by the New York Times recently and several other publications pointing out that 15 years ago there were double-blind studies. One group of patients would get of the SSRI, the other would get a placebo. And there was maybe 1 or 2% at the most difference between those who got the placebo and those, of course, who got the SSRI drugs. And so unless you're dealing with a very, very, very severe depression, these drugs do absolutely no good any more than the sugar pill would. But they can't let the American people or the doctors know that, and so they concealed all of the studies. They lied to the doctors, they lied to the patients, and they lied to the public about it, and that's rather devastating. especially when we know that these drugs actually increase the incidence of homicidal and suicidal ideas in people, and actually many of these people have committed horrible crimes under the influence of the drugs. Many people have actually committed suicide under the influence of the drugs, and there have been a number of lawsuits, haven't there, Byron?
Well, there have been a lot of lawsuits, and there have been a lot of unfortunate situations where life has simply been snuffed out. Whether we see these horrendous shows of homicide or on television, or it's just more personal, there's been a lot of stories where people have been injured seriously by the psychiatric medications, and we find that Big Pharma consistently has withheld their known data, that they knew these were going to be problems. And the Big Pharma executives, I tell you, Dr. Stan, if the Big Pharma executives knew that they'd be tried for involuntary manslaughter when their drugs killed people, when they knew they could kill people and they didn't tell the FDA or the doctors that this is a known risk based on data they have in their hands, if they knew they were going to face actual criminal charges, they wouldn't do this. But they do this with impunity. They know that they have faced nothing but, at the most, very, very most, is they lose their sales. And then sometimes they have to pay lawsuits for damages, but they just tie that up in court and it drags on and on and on and on. It's all, quote-unquote, a cost of doing business. They just factor the cost of potential lawsuits into the price of their drugs and set aside a certain amount of money and then keep right on injuring people. And, the fact, though, that we now have the Senate of the United States of America dictating how medical care should be given to pregnant nursing mothers is beyond belief. Like these bozo clowns actually know something about medicine. It is absolutely absurd. And, what they really want to do here in the case of this legislation is they're trying to move our country into a socialist, big pharma dependent situation. I mean, Dr. Stan, I'm not opposed to health care for everyone. I'm opposed to health care for everyone that's based on the theory of big pharma drugs. That's the problem I have, because that will bankrupt our country, number one, and it will kill people all over the place. We already have 100,000 people a year dying from the side effects of drugs and medications, over 3 million people winding up in emergency rooms with reactions that are just horrendous to these things. And the more we mandate that people can just use these things at taxpayer expense, well, somebody's got to pay for it. It's going to be the working families of America that pay for all these drugs to be given to everybody.
Well, I think one of the perfect examples of this was the Vioxx scandal in Merck. Certainly Dr. David Graham, who was in charge of drug safety at the FDA, knew this was a dangerous drug. He was ordered by his superiors not to let the information out, saying that they wanted to work closely with Merck. Of course they did. Merck was giving the FDA money, and of course many of the people who work for the FDA, if they were good, why, when they retired from the government, they'd go to work for Merck and get a tremendous salary. Well, anyway, Dr. David Graham, and you can actually read his testimony on my website. I reproduced the testimony he gave before the United States Senate. You can go up on my webpage and find it there. But basically, he estimated that the Vioxx was going to kill 60,000 Americans. And, of course, it already had. One of the people at the Cleveland Clinic figured the figure was closer to 160,000 Americans. And, of course, eventually Merck did withdraw the medication. And, of course, they're going to make a settlement. They're going to give about $4 billion. But they made probably three or four times that amount out of the drug that they knew was killing people. They had the records. 60,000 Americans killed by a drug, or was it 160,000? Nobody knows. Nobody cares. They're going to give them a few $1 billion, and the lawyers will end up with most of it. But what about all those destroyed lives, the people with heart attacks or with strokes and in chronic incapacity? What we're dealing with is crass indifference to human suffering. And please, if you have a chance, go to our website, radioliberty.com, pull down Dr. David Graham's testimony and read it, and then weep and understand that it is not simply with Vioxx, but it is with so many of the other drugs that are there. And Byron's on the front lines trying to warn people what's going on. And we want you to, we'll tell you in just a few minutes how to get to his website, get his information. I commend it to you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Byron Richards. And, Byron, about 3 minutes, boy, we'll have all of our stations back with us, and then we want to get the information out about what you're doing and about your books and the other information you have. But certainly at this time, do you think that we're making headway? Are more and more people understanding the danger of this bill that's being put forward by Senator Lieberman, one of his compatriots, that would force health care providers to advise certainly pregnant and nursing women that they should be taking these psychotropic drugs, when, of course, it's only going to harm the unborn child, and certainly number 2% of the children are going to end up with heart defects, and 30% of them are going to develop some sort of psychiatric or mental problems? People understand the implications of this?
Well, I think people are starting to catch on. I mean, when people listen to a show like this, Dr. Stan, they may be hearing about it for the first time. But it's alarming. I'm alarmed by it. You're alarmed by it. Everybody that hears about it is kind of stunned by it. And your first reaction is, well, is this even really possible that something like this could be going on in this country where we would be exposing fetuses to neurologic, cardiovascular, respiratory, nervous system damage just so Big Pharma can make money selling drugs to pregnant women? I mean, this doesn't really make sense. And it's a stunner. You think, well, there would be checks and balances in place in our society, but it's not the case. Both Republicans and Democrats, both sides of the political aisle, are owned by Big Pharma. And until people understand this, so they can get laws through, and this is an attempt of Big Pharma to get a law through that mandates a kind of treatment that's extremely dangerous and very profitable for Big Pharma. And, you know, they've sugarcoated it. They've made it sound like it's just the most helpful bill. It's really going to help moms out. And that's how these senators are signing on to it. They just think they're going to look good. Well, I got news for them. You're all going to be known. All these senators who sign off on this thing are going to be known as the senators that pass legislation that injures babies. And they need to be known this way. The word needs to get out. People need to go to my website at wellnessresources.com and send a letter right now to your senator. Two clicks of a mouse and you can do it. Say no to the Mothers Act. If you want to know more about the Mothers Act, I have an article on that posted on my website. If you want to know more about the actual studies that show the dangers of these drugs, I have all of them on my website in an article, Dangers of Psych Meds During Pregnancy. All of the information is there. There's no reason that anybody can't easily have either enough.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Byron Richards. And Byron is one of those people who's on the front lines trying to warn the American people about the dangers of so many things happening in medicine today. Byron, I want you to give your website out. I want you to talk a little bit about your books and then tell people how they can get the material on the Mothers Act and, of course, how they can, of course, get on your website. And simply with two clicks of a mouse, send a note, send an email to their senator. And when we get enough emails there, maybe some of these senators might step back and look at the harm they're doing, because people must understand there really are people who want to harm children. And as incredible as it may seem, we can say, well, it's just about profit. No, I believe there are people who do have a different worldview. In fact, I'll never forget one time, you know, talking when I was a member of the House of Delegates, the California Medical Association, and I certainly had put forward a resolution that women should be advised of the possibility that if they had a first-term abortion, that they might increase their incidence of breast carcinoma. Of course, all the studies really demonstrated it wasn't a possibility, it was a fact. But the people on the other side, you know, opposed my efforts. And when I asked one woman, doctor, why, she looked at me with the coldest, most evil eyes I ever saw, and she said, "You don't understand. We have a different worldview." And that's absolutely right. There are people who look at the world differently, and I believe that they see nothing wrong with harming either women or children. They have a different agenda. Well, Byron, let's get your website out again. Let's get your material on your books out, and just to take a moment or two here to acquaint people with who you are and what you do.
Well, absolutely. The bill we're talking about is S-1375. It's called the Mothers Act. It's going to indoctrinate women into taking psych drugs during pregnancy. Up to 80% of women. This legislation is trying to brand pregnancy as mental illness. It's a big pharma piece of legislation. It's insane. It must be stopped. You can do that by registering your protest. My website is www.wellnessresources.com. That's wellnessresources.com. Right on my homepage, you got to take action. You can go right to the CAPLIV software with two clicks of a mouse. You got a letter off to both your senators. We need thousands of you to participate in this. The 11th hour is now. The House has already passed this. The bill's in the Senate Health Committee. And it's going to come out of that behind closed doors and be snuck through the Senate in the first week or two when they get back from the Easter recess. So the time is now. It's not tomorrow. It's not 1 week from now. I mean, we need everybody to take action right now. On my website, I have information about the legislation. Very easy to see what that is. I have information about natural health options. Dr. Stan, I'm a clinical nutritionist. I've been helping people for over 20 years find natural solutions. I've helped countless of pregnant women with moods and their babies and the health of their children and postpartum issues and stress issues. There are so many options people have besides drugs that actually work. I explain all those on my website as well. So if you're a person who's interested in that, terrific. I also like to point out I send out a free e-newsletter on a regular basis, and you can sign up when you're at the website. I keep you up to date on the politics of health. I keep you up to date on the breaking health news. I'm an expert in all of this, so I tell you what it actually means so that you can be better informed on how to take care of yourself.
Well, I appreciate so much that you are on the front lines of this. Of course, Barbara had written an excellent article. I believe it was in newsofviews.com, wasn't it?
Yes, I published my articles on newsofviews.com, so I have a couple of them up there right now. My last two, one is called Branding Pregnancy with Mental Illness, and then my most recent drug, The Dangers of Psych Meds During Pregnancy. Both of these are about the Mothers Act. We've had a lot of support also from Mike Adams over at naturalnews.com. He's posted my articles. John Hamill at the International Associates for Health Freedom, IAHF.com, is working on this. Amy Philo, a mom who's really been carrying the brunt of this for months, she's got her website at uniteforlife.org. And so there's been quite a coming together of a lot of the grassroots trying to get the word out on this. But we really need all the listeners out there to participate in this campaign. Because it's just so critically important that your senators know that you are, in fact, opposed to having pregnant women just randomly under the encouragement of Big Pharma, up to 80% of women they want on antidepressants, even though the data shows that these antidepressants can seriously injure babies and cause significant malnourishment and pregnancy malfunction in at least 30% of pregnancies. So this is a horrendous public health issue. Big Pharma is just trying to sneak through for profit, Dr. Stan. It is a horrendous piece of legislation.
I think it is, too, and I think, of course, the fact that they're actually going to be giving donations and payoffs to a lot of the politicians. Of course, they wouldn't call it that. They're simply donating to their reelection campaign, but that's really what it is. It is a payoff. And I do not believe there should be legislation that prevents this sort of thing. I don't think that anybody who has anything to do with legislation that would benefit from legislation be allowed to pay our senators and congressmen, because we have the finest legislators money could buy.
Well, that's about the story. We have two big pharma lobbyists for every member of Congress, and that's a sad scenario, but it's true. Tens of millions of dollars of money are spent lobbying senators, buying them, and twisting their arms, and bamboozling them. And we've got different agendas going on. This Mothers Act is co-sponsored by both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And their motivation apparently for doing it is just to lock more people into dependence on the federal government. It doesn't seem to matter to them that their legislation is going to injure babies. And don't make any mistake about this. It's not just Democrats, it's Republicans who are also in favor of this. And Bush will sign it in a heartbeat because he's for anything that makes more money for Big Pharma.
Okay, so I think the interesting thing is that both Hillary and Obama are in are in favor of this legislation, despite the fact it hurts babies. Well, maybe it's because it hurts babies. Both of these people are, of course, anti-life. Both of them support abortion. Both of them support partial birth abortion, aware, of course, the child is partially delivered, healthy, viable child, and that it can be killed. Well, I would see no reason at all why they wouldn't be strongly in favor of legislation that hurts children. There are people who have a different worldview, and I think until we recognize that, it's very difficult to understand what's going on now. I think most of our senators really don't understand, and they just want to get large contributions from the drug companies. But, of course, we're the ones who are going to pay the bill, and it's going to be our wives and our sisters or our mothers who are going to suddenly have to suffer because of this. And then those children, I mean, what's going to happen to them as their lives develop? And those who, they said 2% of them with congenital heart defects associated with taking these mothers taking these medications, that alone should certainly discourage this sort of medication.
This is unbelievable. And the politics is there. It's real. You know, both Republicans and Democrats support Big Pharma for different reasons. Big Pharma's got everything paid. They don't really care who's in power, Dr. Stan, because they have different angles. I mean, when the Democrats get in, it's more socialized care. That's always good for Big Pharma sales. When the Republicans are in, they're protected against being even investigated. When the Republicans are in power, they just wreak damage randomly. And, of course, Bush puts through, you know, the Medicare tax plan where we can't even negotiate the drug prices with the drug companies. I mean, it's all about money. And, of course, Bush and Bush's father, former President Bush, they're in bed with the drug companies. They have been for decades.
Well, certainly
all about money being shifted wherever it goes. And,
is Father Bush still on the board of Eli Lilly? I know he was for a time.
You know, I don't believe he's still on the board, but what he has done, he started this group called Sea Change, which is in charge of the $50 billion a year cancer industry. And Andrew von Eschenbach, who's the head of the FDA, was the man that President Bush had running, the former president had running Sea Change, and then because of his relationship with the elder Bush, the new Bush put him into the head of the FDA. And so it was like unlocking the keys to the door to the FDA, to the drug companies. And so now we have a situation where Big Pharma sales reps are at the very top positions of the FDA. This is why all of this ludicrous Looney Tune stuff is able to go on. The FDA has no interest in doing its actual job. They're actually trying to figure out how to expose people to new and dangerous drugs, which is why they have written into the Mothers Act that you, the taxpayer, will pay for their new dangerous biologic drugs to be developed at taxpayer expense so that Big Pharma can experiment on pregnant and postpartum moms.
And of course, this gives incest a bad name, you know. This gives incest a bad name. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're out there and you have a question for Byron, the Mothers Act is a very, very dangerous act. Certainly the SSRI drugs, the serotonin inhibitor drugs, certainly are dangerous, and we are really very, very concerned giving them to anybody, but giving them to a pregnant woman certainly is beyond the pale. Our number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 464-8295, and we welcome your questions for Byron, because he's on the front lines of this battle. We need to get this information out. You need to tell others. You need to go to his website, and that's wellnessresources.com. That's wellnessresources.com. Won't take you that long to send the email, and, of course, you could be saving on the life of a child, an unborn child. So anyway, of course, are you doing a lot of talk radio at the present time, Byron?
I've been making the rounds on different stations. I'll be on this weekend. Of course, we're doing another program. I'll be on this weekend with Jonathan Emord, who's, of course, the leading health freedom attorney in our country. And his radio program, he's invited me to be on and talk about the Mothers Act. And I'll be on the following week with Robert Scott Bell over on the East Coast. And so, there's definitely interest. I'm going to be on Mike Adams at National News. He's got a new radio program going out all over the place, and I'll be on with him in a week or so here, also talking about it. So people are hearing about it, but it really is going to require a massive grassroots objection here to this going on, because the senators have to know. I mean, your vote really matters. Anytime you send an email to the senators, they think one email equals 100,000 people who feel the way you do. That's how they count and tally these things. We've got over, we've got close to 5,000 letters sent in so far. So that's 10,000 senators have gotten, you know, because it's 5,000 people sending two letters. And but we need more, Dr. Stan. We need to really bump this up here in the next week or two. And our goal is to get up to the 20,000 mark, which is doable, especially people tell their friends. It's real easy because when you do the CapWiz software, it takes you just a second to send it in. And then if you want, you can notify your friends about this right from that software, and so they can take action immediately as well, too. So it's a great program that really helps get the letters to the senators so they know that you don't like pregnant women being a target of big pharma at taxpayer expense, especially when babies are going to be injured and mothers are going to really struggle as a result of this. So go to my website, wellnessresources.com, right on the home page, take action. It's real easy. Just click on it, and away you go. It won't take more than a minute of your time. Please help stop the Mothers Act.
Well, let's go to Amy, who's calling us from Frisco, Texas. Hi, Amy. How are you doing?
Thanks so much for doing this show. This is Amy Philo.
Amy, hi.
Say hi to Byron and hi.
Amy's the one who's been leading the charge along with everyone else here, Dr. Stan. Great to have her on.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize that if anyone's out there listening and they are a victim, like I became a victim a few years ago, if they could go to my website and get my email address and let me know, because I want more people coming forward. And we need to stop this now. And I also have a petition that has over 6,000, almost 7,000 signatures now, that we need so many more, and it only takes a couple of minutes to sign that.
Amy, tell us a little bit about what you went through as a mom. You had your first child. You weren't feeling good. What happened?
Well, it was all kind of ridiculous looking back, because I never should have been put on Zoloft in the first place, but I actually started taking it when I was only 6 days postpartum, because my baby had almost died right before my eyes when he was 3 days old, and he started choking when he tried to throw up on some formula. Within 3 days of taking Zoloft, I had a hallucination of killing him, and I went to the psych hospital, and I was there for a couple of days, and they convinced me to stay on the drug, even though I was kind of suspicious of it. They said there's no way I could be safe if I didn't stay on it. So I stayed on it for 5 months. I raised my dose twice, and each time that I raised my dose, because my doctor told me to, the thoughts of homicide got way more intense. And by the end of the whole experience, I was like imagining killing my entire family and my cats, and even killing my neighbors and committing suicide. So I finally just like looked into it some more and found out that this was a common thing that happens to people, and realized that it wasn't me. I wasn't actually a crazy person, and I decided to taper off of it. So I did so over a few weeks, and then I went back to being the regular, normal person that I am.
Well, Amy, I would love to get you onto one of our radio programs after we let you go. Would you mind staying on the line? I'll see if I can get my producer to get your telephone number. We'll call you. We'd love to get you to tell this story to people all across America, because I think that this is one of the most dangerous drugs, the SSRI. And if we don't get the information out, why, they're going to continue using this on the American people.
Yeah, and a lot of people are forced to take it. It's really scary. Make sure everyone knows to go to uniteforlife.org to get the petition also, and make sure you find that letter on Byron's website.
That's unitedforlife.org, is that it?
It's Unite for Life.
Uniteforlife.org.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good stories on that website, too, that Amy's put up about other situations, not only her story, but another child, Manny, who was injured with the cardiovascular side effects.
Yeah, that one's really sad. It makes you cry to watch the videos. Oh, also tonight I added a link on the very top of the page about a study in Sweden that showed 80% of all adult suicides were from people taking psychiatric drugs.
Well, of course, if you believe in population control, this would certainly be an advantage. Anything else you'd like to say, Amy, before we let you go?
Just thank you so much for doing the show, and everyone go sign the petition and call your senators.
All right, Amy, would you hang on the line? I'm going to see if I can get our producer to pick you up. Okay?
Okay,
then let's see. I'll see if I get Andy to get the telephone number of Amy. Well, Our guest this evening has been Byron Richards. And, of course, we've been talking about the Mothers Act that has already passed the House of Representatives. You haven't heard about it because, of course, they don't want you to know. And then, of course, we are also suddenly seeing this thing. It should be getting through the Senate before long. And when it does, once these things become law, why, it is very, very difficult, of course, to do anything about them. And it'll cost billions of dollars down the line. It will do irreparable harm both to the mothers and to the unborn children. And we can put a stop to this foolishness if there are enough people out there who care. So I'd suggest you go to Byron's website, and that's wellnessresources.com. Is that right, Byron?
That's right, Dr. Stan, and we've got the Take Action letter right there.
Okay, hold on.
As Amy was saying, she has a petition on her website. That's also helpful. It's a little different.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, Byron, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's been a pleasure to be on with you this evening talking about this Bill S-1375, the Mothers Act. For those of you just tuning in, that is a bill that seeks to mandate a kind of care where pregnant and nursing mothers will, in fact, be indoctrinated. Up to 80% of them are the target for the use of psychiatric medications. These drugs are not only extremely dangerous to a lot of the moms personally because they wind up their nerves, they don't behave in any kind of a textbook fashion, they actually raise and make a mom more depressed and feel strange and raise anxiety, and it is well known, and Big Pharma knows, that in these situations it's often preferable to be dead or to kill than to just keep going. And so that's the nasty.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of God's creation.